What is going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 51 of the MM Arcade Podcast. Rob, today, finally, the Sphere, the event happened. I got to get your overall thoughts before we break it down fight by fight, but what did you think of the Sphere, bro?
Wasn't the Sphere awesome, man?
Insane.
Like, it was wild. I had to call Sphere over and everybody else because,
yeah,
like, because the whole thing is just a screen. So they were displaying things on the outside and the inside. They could change, like, the surroundings from where we were sitting at home watching it on TV.
It looked
wild. I can only imagine what it would be like seeing such big versions and visions of yourself, like, on the sides.
Dude, one of the ones where I think it was the flower, the sunflower, and it felt like it was falling into the crowd after it kind of broke up. That stuff was insane. I couldn't imagine what it actually looked like in person. Maybe they'll do another event there. Who knows?
They have to. It was wild to see. It's so good.
Yeah.
So good. I can only imagine how much money it cost, eh?
He said like 20 plus million. That was the numbers that Dana said publicly, which is insane.
To build the Sphere or just to host the
Dude, the Sphere would have been so much more money than that. Just for the production and everything that went into like the chapters and the videos, and they had to buy new cameras and everything. Dana was saying it was like 20 plus million. And in all likelihood, they probably lost money on that card when you consider everything. That's kind of what he was saying before.
Nah, no way.
I don't know.
Did it look like to you that it doesn't seat that many, bud?
Yeah. I mean, I think every time that I've seen footage of the Sphere, I've always gotten that sense. It's more about the experience and being able to see this cool movie-like cinematics rather than cramming in as many people as possible. Yeah, I wonder if there was a cool way for them to do that given the layout.
Yeah, I wonder how much tickets were as well.
So they were like thousands of dollars to begin with, but then I believe they were struggling a little bit because down the road it was the Canelo fight. So they reduced it down to like $1,500. I saw some tickets. So eventually they did sell out what I saw.
Fair enough.
It was pretty crazy. But of course, we are going to get into our breakdowns and reactions of UFC 306, talk about the main event and all the other fights that interested us. If you are new to the podcast, please subscribe, like if you enjoy the video. But let's jump right into it. In the main event, Sean O'Malley is defeated by Merab Dvalishvili, and he becomes the new bantamweight champion. Rob, what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, firstly, I tipped O'Malley.
Same. Okay. Personally, I did
now,
too.
Yeah. Now, I feel like I tipped O'Malley because, for one, I do think he's a sniper, a sharpshooter with his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And Merab's been rocked in just about every fight.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that O'Malley would have been able to find a hole in Merab's game early on, and he wouldn't have got past that.
Yeah.
But in saying that, though, I also back – like, I feel that – I don't know when it was, maybe a year or two ago. Every time I would back a wrestling-heavy guy that fights a stand-up guy, prime example being Kobe Covington versus Leon Edwards.
Yeah.
Or Usman the second time. I feel like there was this period where I just kept tipping all the wrestlers.
Yeah.
Because I expected them – to do exactly what Merab did to O'Malley tonight.
Mm.
But they let me down. Oh, time and time again. That wouldn't happen.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And obviously there's a lot that goes into that. It's obviously has a lot to do with the striking and the defense and the spacing of the strikers at the, you know, in the fight. But in this fight, Merab did exactly what what he should have done on paper. Like, if you were to write this fight on paper, that's what you would have written. And he did it exactly.
Yeah, you mentioned that you personally tipped Sean. We didn't have our predictions video, but I was tipping Sean as well. I thought he would knock Merab out. As much as I like Merab as a fighter and as a personality, he was wobbled by Cejudo, who is not necessarily known for his hands. He was wobbled by Marias, I think it was. And I thought all Sean needs to do is get one on the chin and he's out. But he had like no real opportunity throughout that fight to mount any kind of offense because Merab's pressure, man, it's otherworldly. His cardio's fit. He said after the fight, I could go another 50 rounds, and I don't doubt him. It's insane. Yeah.
I think I think he was tired in that fifth, or he was playing it super safe, which he can do after smashing him for four rounds.
Yeah.
Right. But I think he was tired. But in saying that, let's say he was tired in that fifth, he still is superhuman with his cardio.
Yeah.
Like, that was gnarly. And it's not like it was just this fight. No, he does it every single fight. Every time he steps in there and fights someone, he's taking that level of volume and pressure and mauling to him.
Yeah. I think the fifth, there was a front kick from O'Malley, which really worked the body of Merab, and I think that actually hurt him. He couldn't hide it. He was hurt by that. But I think that by that stage, he kind of knew that he'd absolutely had that fight in the bag and he just needed to survive, because you could kind of tell as well throughout that fight, Merab, as often as he was trying to take Sean down, he probably wasn't doing it as much as compared to his previous fights, because he did respect the power of Sean. He knew that he was a one-hitter quitter. So he was a little bit hesitant sometimes, but then when he had the opportunity, especially when every time he went in with the right overhand and then straight into the takedown, it was beautiful. Cinema. I freaking love watching that, man.
Well, yeah, right hands to knee picks got to be one of my favorite like punch wrestling combos.
Yeah, all
the best did it, right? But I will say Merab did an amazing job mixing up the timing and the feints the entire fight.
Yeah.
Because the way he was moving, the way he was bouncing on his toes, left, right, backwards, forwards, that was really playing with O'Malley's timing. Because like I said, O'Malley is a sniper. His timing is impeccable.
Yeah.
But he couldn't find the timing or the opportunity or the reads from Merab, because Merab was being so sporadic and spontaneous with his movements and with his shots and with his punches. A lot of it wasn't making sense. You'll see in the fight, there wasn't a lot of times he did the same thing over and over, but consecutively. Yeah. A lot of the times he was circling around, just creating different angles so that O'Malley couldn't get his feet under him and fire off those dangerous strikes down the pipe.
Yeah.
It was ingenious on Merab, and to have the cardio to, like, we've seen in other fights, he doesn't really, like, we haven't seen him dance around that much in other fights. In other fights, he moves forward, he pushes into his opponents
constantly,
forces hands, and then takes them down, like, constantly pressures forward. Whereas this time, we saw him, the lateral movement was on point. Everything just leads me to thinking it was part of the game plan so that O'Malley couldn't get his feet set, so that he couldn't fire down the line. There were no reads, there was no tells, there was no opportunity, and Merab did it so well.
Yeah, I was getting into some arguments with people online. I think I responded to an ESPN tweet and said that was a straight mauling, and you and I were talking like throughout the fight, Merab was just ragdolling Sean at times, and some people were saying, oh, Merab wasn't getting much damage in, all he was doing is hugging him, and I'm like, bro, you're watching MMA, like, he straight up mauled him for the vast majority of the fight. Yes, Sean probably won the fifth round. Yes, I think it was the third round where it was much closer, and I believe some judges gave it to Sean. But overall, from pillar to post, he was not just hugging him. He was getting in significant strikes constantly. I think it was the fourth round, which was like 61 to 6 significant strikes. He was laying in damage. He was kneeing him up against the cage. Those are strikes.
I saw a stat where he was like 70 ahead in one of the rounds. And it's like, it wasn't a hug fest. It was like Merab was constantly pressuring and laying in strikes, even albeit not huge damaging ones, but of course. It was a mauling. Like,
yeah.
It looked personal.
Yeah, it did.
You know what I mean? But it's like, I say this and I'm only giving props to Merab, like how good he was.
Absolutely.
But I tipped Sean. I thought Sean would do it, but Merab was so diligent in the game plan. He understood that he needed to get Sean tired.
Yeah.
Even though he knew he was getting himself tired, he knew that Sean would be worse off for it. And I feel that every time Merab took him down, every time he pressured him, he did that mauling and got Sean to start having to address that by putting hands up to defend himself, Sean was getting tired.
Yeah.
Pop was getting taken out of his arms, because let's not pretend like Sean didn't land any shots in the fight. There were a few times Sean landed excellent shot straight down the pipe.
Yeah.
There was one particular one. I don't remember whether it was in round two or round three where Sean went straight down the pipe 1-2.
Yeah.
And I tell you right now, if Merab hadn't diligently tired O'Malley out for the for 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 the time before those strikes and gotten his arm tied, those strikes would have hurt or even finished the fight. Like that was, it was such a clean one too. Not a lot of people have taken that strike, like that particular combo from O'Malley and been able to just, you know, weather it and take it in. Whereas because I think he was so tired, Merab didn't even bother. He wasn't fast. It didn't hurt him.
What did you think, by the way, of Herb Dean throughout that fight? It was a talking point on the commentary that he kept saying to them, you need to work, you need to work. It was a bit odd sometimes, right? Like that was standing up and saying you got to work when, I don't know, it was a little bit weird. Oftentimes I don't side with the commentators on it, but this one I was like, Herb, come on, just let them fight. They're doing fine.
Yeah, I think it was too much.
Yeah.
But I can see what Herb was trying like to do because Merab was, whether he was or was not, it looked like he was trying to like wind down the clock at the end.
In the fifth round, of course.
The entire fifth round, Merab was kind of just draining time.
Yeah.
Like circling a lot, not doing much, not engaging too much, you know, just playing that sort of game. And I can see Herb being like, that's not cool, work. No, work, like just like giving him warnings, like, come on, do something. Yeah. But he did too much. He did way too much. He said work whenever Merab was in any position.
And like hitting him. There was one time I saw Merab hitting Sean and was like, you got to keep working. There were a few times on the ground where I was like, yeah, that's a fair call. But he kept doing it constantly. And I'm like, nah, Herb, you got to, like, this is Merab's game plan for one. And he was actually getting in some offense there. It was weird. I like Herb Dean. It was just an odd one for me. And it kept coinciding with the boos in the crowd. So I worry he was letting, you know, the crowd influence that kind of commentary. But
yeah, it's hard to say. It's a hard job.
It is. I was literally saying to my wife, Steph, beforehand that, you know, these refs make mistakes all the time. Herb Dean has done it. It happens. It doesn't really matter. But I got to ask you, the next fight, it seems like, and I'm happy to concede on this, right? I was really pushing for Figueiredo to get the next fight, but it seems like the UFC is gunning for the Umar Nurmagomedov angle against Merab Dvalishvili. Seems like that's going to be the next fight, and if that's going to be the case, I would like to see Piotr Jan against Figgy for the number one contender spot. I think that's what should be next.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, how many fights has Figgy had in...
Three now, I think. Right now.
Is it three or two?
No, Davis, I'll look it up now so I'm not talking out my ass, but I'm pretty sure it's three wins now.
Who did he beat last fight?
So he beat Marlon Vera, Cheeto. He beat Cody Garbrandt, and he beat Rob Font. Yeah, three fights and bantamweight.
Yeah, I can see them, like, if he fights Jan and beats him, he gets a title shot after that, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then Umar and Merab fight.
Yeah, very passionate about making that Umar fight happen.
And I think it is a very interesting, compelling fight. I mean, we saw in Umar's last fight, he clearly has better hands than Merab, and I think he could really match him with the wrestling. Though a lot of people thought that that Cejudo would have matched Merab with the wrestling, and we saw what he did with him for that entire fight. But I think Umar's a different beast right now in his career. So that should be a good fight, man.
It should be. It should be. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, that was the main event. Let us know what you thought in the comments below. But for the co-main, Valentina Shevchenko defeats Alexa Grasso by unanimous decision. Weird fight, man. Weird fight. Want to get your thoughts on it. Yeah.
Mate, like Valentina, she's so experienced when it comes to championship fights.
Yeah.
She's so well-versed in going back to the drawing board, making adjustments, and coming back with a game plan that is almost sure-proof, you know, fireproof. She dominated Alexa Grasso the entire fight. Five rounds, took her down every opportunity. She looked so much more stronger than Grasso, so much more powerful.
So much.
Grasso wasn't – you know what? Like, I'll say Grasso looked dangerous off her back. Okay.
Absolutely.
She looked dangerous. But few and far between, like the fight's 25 minutes rounds. She was maybe attacking submissions. Like Valentina was in dangerous positions, maybe what, for 2 minutes of that, you reckon?
Yep.
Yeah. It's, you can't win a fight like that. And I feel like Grasso was doing just not much in the stand up department. She wasn't really making any sort of headway, movement or anything. In the stand-up division, Shevchenko, I think, had that quite handedly until she took it down, in which case she just controlled her. I don't know. It was like a textbook Shevchenko fight to me.
Yeah, I personally thought that Valentina was going to win that fight, but I didn't think it was going to be in that dominant of a fashion. I didn't think Grasso wasn't going to be able to get off any offense whatsoever, but I did think that Shevchenko's wrestling was going to make the difference. I did think her speed was going to make the difference. And you talked about the power. There were a couple of occasions in there where it looked like Grasso was getting in the takedown and Valentina just outpowered her, outmuscled her. It was beautiful to see. And I've always appreciated it
as well.
Yeah. I've always appreciated Shevchenko's Muay Thai style as well. She was so bloody quick. And she's a champion again, man. And she proves it at 37 years of age. Really happy to see her get the win. And I think she's going to be fighting probably Fjord next.
I feel like Grasso, like for one, I don't know.
God.
I'm trying to, they've fought three times now.
Yes.
I don't know how Grasso won the first. Well, I do.
She submitted. Yeah.
She was losing until she submitted Shevchenko, right?
Yeah.
And then I don't know how the second one was a draw. Because this third fight, like Grasso did nothing.
At all.
I don't want to come down hard on her. Okay, because maybe she was just shut down that heavy, but it was a draw last fight, right?
Did you think Valentina won that fight out of curiosity?
The second one?
Yeah.
I think it could have gone either way. Like,
okay.
I think if they would have raised Shevchenko's hand, like no one's arguing it.
Fair.
Same thing, right?
Fair.
But yeah, I don't know. It didn't look like Grasso wanted to be in that fight. It looked like a significant level difference this fight round, this time round.
And by the fourth round, even though Corner was telling her, like, hey, you got to get this done, and it just didn't seem like she wanted to be there. Didn't seem like she wanted to throw much offense. And
I don't know.
I know the second fight was controversial, especially given that 10-8 decision judgment in the fifth. But at least there were multiple times in that second fight where Grasso put Val down. She couldn't do any of that. Yeah. In this fight, the closest I think it was the guillotine attempt, but that was it. That was the closest that Shevchenko got to losing that fight. And even throughout that attempt, Shevchenko didn't really look like she was going to get choked out whatsoever. No.
Shevchenko looked like she had control the entire time. Like I said, it like really looked like there was a level difference, which is crazy because like Grasso was a champion.
Absolutely. Well, Grasso, no longer the champion. Shevchenko is the new champion. Let's see who she defends against. As I mentioned, I think it's going to be Fiore. But now, finally, the division has been shaken up. It's no longer Shevchenko against Grasso. We're going to have some new matchups in the women's flyweight division. But let's talk about the next fight. Diego Lopez defeating Brian Ortega by unanimous decision. Rob, what do you think?
Diego Lopez is an animal, dude.
He's a dog, like, bro.
He's a dog, and I love to see it. I love to see it. Like, the guy's running through people, and he looks so good against Ortega. And tell me if you felt differently. Ortega's like the sort of dude that he was after the first round, I was thinking, Ortega's going to find a way to win.
I thought so too. No, you know what? When he almost got, I thought he almost got in the triangle choke after he got knocked down. I'm like, this is it. This is where he submits him.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen.
Because Ortega is such, like, that's his thing.
Yeah.
It's like his superpower. Like, he'll get fed for like 12 and a half minutes and then win somehow, you know? But nah, Diego Lopez, man, he showed that he deserves not only to be in the top 10, but the top 5. And, mate, welcome to the top 5 because Ortega was 3. Lopez is going to be 3 now next week. He's just playing with the big boys now. Skill set wise, I think he has the skill set to tangle with those guys. Like, I don't.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I saw a lot of really good looks jiu-jitsu wise when he was kind of. When he had Ortega on his back, when he wasn't backing away, when the way he was defending things, the way he was like knee sliding across different things, he was doing really well there, which means like he looked comfortable there.
Yeah.
Okay. And then in the hands department, he looked so fast and powerful that I think he's going to get problems. Like, obviously, the guys that he's fighting are like your Holloways, your Volks. Your Topuria's right now. Like, I think they're the only ones ahead of him. Holloway, Topuria, and Volk.
Yeah.
Like, wild, right? Like, they're the guys he's fighting against. But I don't hate him in those fights. I think they're gonna be hard fights, but
yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited for him.
It's very interesting to see what happens next in the division, because obviously we got Topuria against Holloway. That's happening very soon. We know that Volk is going to be getting his title rematch against Topuria, or the winner of Topuria and Holloway. So it feels like either Lopez is sitting tight until that figures itself out, or I think he's up for another fight. Personally, either he fights the loser of Topuria and Holloway, or maybe he fights the winner of Aljo and Movsar, and then they figure out who's the number one contender. I want Lopez to keep busy because he's so bloody exciting. He hits like a truck. And even though he didn't get to show it off too much in this fight, his BJJ skills are like up there with the best of them. He's a second degree black belt. And if it was anyone else aside from Brian Ortega in that spot, I think we would have seen more of that in that fight.
I think that he showed, like, I saw exactly how good his jiu-jitsu was in that fight. I think the guys that know the game can look at that fight and see just how good Lopez's jiu-jitsu was. Because, like I said, when Ortega would have to be one of the more dangerous guys in the entire UFC off their back.
Absolutely.
Like, he's a very dangerous guy. He's got very crafty jiu-jitsu. So, yeah, for Lopez to just handle it so well, engage in it, you know, willingly, and to keep Ortega there, to land the strikes that he was landing, you know, it was a good win. I feel for Ortega, though. I like Ortega, but it's Lopez's time.
I like Ortega as well. People were saying, oh, Ortega needs to retire and all this crap. Guys, come on. Like, it's one loss.
Retire?
It's so stupid, man. Every time I see, oh, this fight was washed and whatever, like, the division is better with Ortega in it. And there's a bunch of great matchups that he can still have. Like,
literally, like, if you've been in the UFC for any amount of time and then, like,
you lose once,
like, a winning streak and then you lose once, you're done. Wash.
So stupid.
Retire.
I hate it.
It's terrible.
But let's see what happens next. As I mentioned, though, Lopez is definitely up there. Whether he's top five or top three, depending upon how the rankings figure themselves out, I would like to see him fight either the winner of Aljo Movsar or just give him the loser of Holloway and Topuria. But next fight on the card, Esteban Ribovitz defeats Daniel Zahuba by split decision. Fight of the night? Far out, dude. What a clinical striking display. I don't know, but it should have been, even if it was.
Probably, yeah.
Sorry. I'll find out, but what do you think of that fight?
One of the best fights of the year. Like, it was so good to see. But it was a clinic. It was a treat to watch. If anyone who is a fan of striking enjoyed that fight. Like, even if you're not, you enjoyed that fight. But if you're a fan of the craft, then you saw the level at which I was throwing. And, mate, let me tell you, round three, Zahuba. How is he not dead?
I don't know.
I'm sure he was unconscious doing the rope-a-dope on the fence still. Like, and let me ask another question. Ribovics, what does he do for arm cardio? Because the guy unloaded like 300 punches in the space of 30 seconds and then had the gas still to like continue fighting well. Normally you see a guy like deliver his payload and not come up spades and then have to like retreat, reverse, breathing hard, panting. Guy could throw forever. Like his volume was wild.
Dude, that third round that you're talking about, I pulled up the numbers, 92 to 43 significant total strikes, and then significant strikes were 92 to 43 as well. That's weird. They're saying that every strike landed and was significant. That's crazy. I don't know because that
happened in the span of that 20 seconds.
I don't know about that.
Old boy was like not there, right? It was wild, man.
Dude.
It was crazy. I want to give props to both of them. And Ribovics, man, walks out to my walkout song.
He did. I saw.
Which I can only take as like a good luck sign, a good omen, right? It was like as soon as I heard the music and I saw him walking, I was like, I got a good feeling about
this
guy.
He's gonna win.
I got a good feeling about this guy. It was sick. It was my fight of the night. Honestly, one of the better fights of the year.
And I checked as well. It was the official fight of the night. They both deserved the 50K. They deserve more than that. Absolutely.
100%. Zahuba deserves way more. Guy, mate, that How is he not dead? Like,
did you see the way he was moving up against the cage? And you could tell he was out of it.
I will give it to the refs tonight. They did such a good job tonight on not calling fights early. Like, they let so many guys, because there's more fights we'll talk about where the guys were let back into the fight. It was crazy. And props to the referees tonight for nailing it.
I believe that happened in the next fight that we're about to talk about, but that was absolutely fine, right? Let's talk about Renato Rodriguez defeats Odie Osborne by unanimous decision, 29-28 and two 29-27 decisions. This was another good fight, bro.
Rodriguez, dead set dead to the world, out cold. You could tell. And the ref let him fight back into it. It was crazy. But before he was recovered, Odie puts him in a triangle, like as deep as I've ever seen it. And Rodriguez was just living in there, man. Rodriguez was, so comfortable in adversity. Was never going to quit. And then I don't know how much Odie put into that triangle, because I'm sure he couldn't have put three rounds worth of cardio into that triangle, right? But maybe he did, because after that, he was gassed, like, for the entire fight. So I think Osborne put three rounds worth of cardio into that attempt. But Rodriguez, man, like, because he was doing the body triangles a lot as well.
Yeah.
He was doing so well, like, just muscling out of positions, using technique to control the mount, the body triangle. He had, like, a mount body triangle at one point. He was putting the hurt on Osborne.
Yeah. Especially with how you mentioned before that he got very tired. He started that fight, Odie Osborne, like, so quick. He was I couldn't even see his punches at times, and he obviously dropped him. And then after that, we didn't really see any of that. He completely gassed himself out. And it was this close. If there was any other referee in there, man, it could have been called.
Oh, mate. You know, I don't know, because this the refs tonight did well from earlier fights than this.
True.
I think it was just like maybe the event, the sphere, I don't know. Maybe they had a pep talk in the sphere. They're like, boys, we're going to let guys fight out of this tonight. Tonight. But it was cool, man, because Rodriguez fought through adversity, fought through getting really, really hurt, and won.
It was a fantastic fight. I think you and I were saying before this that the prelims, maybe not the early prelim fight, but the prelims were probably better than the main card. And this showed it. This was freaking fantastic.
Yep. It was one of one of the better fights. Like, there's more. We're going to get into it.
Absolutely. And the next fight that we have to talk about is Norma Dumont defeating Irene Aldana by unanimous decision. Actually, sorry, I think I misspoke. I think that did start the main card. So I think this was the featured prelim. I can't remember. But Norma Dumont defeats Irene Aldana by unanimous decision. Have any thoughts on this one, Rob?
Yeah, mate. Aldana is a dog, dude. Like,
keeps going forward. Never stops.
Dog. She now has like a gaping hole in her forehead.
Oh.
Like gaping. And she does not care. Like, she just kept walking forward the entire time.
Yeah.
And Dumont did such a good job of keeping her at the end of the jab, timing her strikes, evading away, sliding away from a lot of Aldana's big shots.
Yeah.
We saw Dumont get tired in the third. We saw Aldana start to land more and more frequently in round three. But by round three, the damage was done.
Yeah.
Dumont had like very clearly cemented the fight in her way. But I will say Aldana's a dog still. Like, she's an animal.
And I feel bad, because it was an accidental head clash which caused that. And they were mentioning, and maybe you can kind of give us more info on this, they were mentioning that the judges were probably told this was an accidental head clash. Don't consider this in the scoring or whatever. Is that a thing that they would probably, like, a piece of advice that they would give to the judges? Because if you don't know that it was accidental, then that looks like a hugely damaging shot, right? Blood pouring everywhere.
Mate, I don't know what you want me to say.
Does
anyone understand how the judges
score? No. I'm just trying to understand sometimes how it works.
Mate, I'll fight fights where I barely get touched, but I swell up like crazy, or I piece the guy up and the other guy just doesn't blemish very well.
Paulo Costa does not blemish at all.
Dude, like, I don't know. I don't know. That's I don't know how the judges score anything, but the head clash opened a cut. The cut got way worse from punching into it. And like, I mean it. It was, did you see it at the end of the fight?
It was from here to like there, dude.
Yeah, and wide. It was wide, dude. It was crazy big. Oh,
dude, it was this one, and then it was another women's fight a couple of months ago, which was another really bad cut to the eye. I can't remember who was body fighting. Let us know in the comments below. I can't remember who I'm thinking of. But those two were horrible. This might have been the worst cut that I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. I think like tonight was the night where I thought to myself, like, women's MMA has taken a step forward. Like, yeah. Collectively.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in like a belittling way, but I mean like all the women came here tonight to bang. They came out to fight. They were aggressive for it, looking for the kill. They were looking for the win the entire time. They were wild. Like, they were wild fights.
Yeah.
We'll get into that Souza one because next. Like, that was wild, but let's not skip fights.
No, we won't. Next up is Ignacio Bahamondes knocking out Manuel
Torres.
Because
this one was cool too, dude.
This is good as well. So this one was definitely on the prelims and one of the highlights of the night for sure.
Yeah. Bahamondes, like, he was riding such a hype train, I feel. I feel like he was like, I think, what do they call him? What's his nickname? Like, it was something crazy, like Maniac, Devil, Psycho, I don't know, something like that. But, like, they were hyping him up, like, and you could see he had utter belief in his knockout power from the get-go. But he was charging in with his chin up repeatedly. Like, he was just reckless. I mean, and Torres just leaned back, bang, and it was over. Like, you can't be doing that.
No. It was I think you meant that Bahamondes knocks out Torres, right?
Hey?
It was the other way around, I think.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, yep. But it was beautiful because Torres was coming out. He was putting a lot of pressure. He was swinging. It was just, he just got that step back right counter. I think it happened twice. It was beautiful to see. I hope that they also got a bonus. Bahamondes got a bonus as well because that was a great knockout.
That was clean. Torres was just too reckless.
Yeah.
Too reckless. Yeah. And maybe that's just experience, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think he'll come back from this, but it was a beautiful knockout. But let's get to the fight that you really want to talk about.
Well, hold on. Before we jump again, like, Torres had moments.
He did
look intimidating. He did look like he was putting the pressure and the power on Bahamondes, but, mate, Bahamondes just stayed calm, stayed collected, and found the hole, took his opportunity.
For sure. And next up, Ketlen Souza submits Yasmin. I can't pronounce her last name. Yaraguay, I think. I can't remember. But this one was fantastic, right? So big left from Souza, drops her, and the way that she jumped in for that submission was phenomenal. Phenomenal. Rob, what do you think?
I thought, like, it was strawweight. You don't really see strawweights with that level of power.
No.
But then not only does she land the shot, like, massive shot right on the chin, okay? Because Yasmin looked – she was doing really well, really, really well. But then they tied up. She lands that hook. It was a left hook.
Left, yeah.
Left hook. And then that killer instinct jumps on – like, she wasn't even fully secured on her back. She's kind of falling off still. But locked in that rear naked, slid down to the cable grip. And did you see how long it took Yasmin to get up?
I was seriously concerned for her. And the camera just stayed on her. I'm like, fucking move.
I feel like Souza held on to it a little bit. Like,
there was a good second in there.
I feel like the ref was like, whoa, it's over. You can stop. And she was like, hold on 1 second. And then just
I'm not done yet.
It gave it a little bit more of a squeeze and then let her go. I feel like that's what sent Yasmin into the shadow realm because
she
did not get up for a while.
Yeah, dude, she was out from the moment that she was like punching her arms. I was like, yeah, she's done. And then the ref called it. Then she held it in for another second. That was dangerous, man. That's
I feel like we aren't talking about that extra second or two squeeze before Yasmin
before
Susan to let go. But whatever, like it was a good win. It was a good win. Great instincts. Great finishing instincts.
Yep.
Yeah.
And dude, we are already at like 35 minutes in this podcast, so we can just rattle off the rest of them. Joshua Van defeats Edgar Chavez by decision. Good fight. Also as well, we had Raul Rosas Jr. winning as well, but like I wasn't too impressed by the Raul Rosas Jr. win.
Why was he on the early prelims?
I don't know, man. He's still not ranked yet. He's still young, I guess. It's weird.
It's a big deal. I don't know.
I don't know why there was an early prelims because there weren't that many fights anyways. Just have a
prelims. Wasn't he the only one on it?
Yeah, literally just him. just him.
Cool.
He called as well for the – it wasn't a dominant win, and he called as well for the bonus from Dana. I'm like, dude, you lost a round. That dominant.
Raul asked for the bonus every single time. Fight. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Have you seen him fight before? Guy asked for it every time.
Look, I like him though. I love his catchphrase. I'm saying chi wee wees every day now. Every friggin' day.
I hate that. I don't
why do you hate that?
Because it's stupid. I'm a grown ass man.
And he's a teenager still. He's 19 years old.
Yeah, but but yeah. I'm a grown ass man though. You know,
fair. I don't know if you saw when he got the crowd to say chee wee wees, you could see Joe Rogan like very subtly mouth it. It was very funny. But that was UFC 306 in the Sphere. Rob, can I get your overall thoughts on the card?
I thought it was a crazy fight card. I did one of the times where I think like from the prelims really set the stage for the card itself. The Sphere looked unbelievable. I don't know. As you said, I don't know if the UFC made their money back from the booking because like it looked insane. Yeah. It looked insane. I think it would have been an awesome time. Hopefully I'll get a chance to fight there. But
I hope they do it again. You reckon he'll do it again? He said they'll never do it again because of how expensive it was and they just wanted
probably
to be
not.
One and done.
It looked expensive and it did look like they had huge seating. Like every angle of the screen, it didn't look like – it looked like an amphitheater really. It didn't, I don't know.
They were saying something as well. I don't know if this is true and I might be speaking out of turn here, but they were saying this might have been the first proper 1080p HD broadcast of the UFC and everyone before that has either been like in 720 or 1080i. I don't know if that's true. Can someone tell me in the comments? I saw someone post about it. I'm like, there's no way that is the first proper HD UFC broadcast. There is no way.
It looked the exact same as every other UFC I've ever seen.
Well, maybe because Binge is still streaming in 720p. I don't know. That's the only way that we can watch fights here in Australia. But that was UFC 306. Next up, as always, let's jump into the game news. And by far, Rob, biggest piece of game news, PlayStation announces the brand new PS5 Pro. This is going to be launching on the 7th of November. Essentially, the whole thing is that they want you to not have to choose between a performance mode and a high graphics mode that's only 30 FPS. You get to have the best of both worlds with this one. We have an upgraded GPU, better ray tracing, and also we're finally having AI upscaling in the PlayStation 5, kind of like DLSS and other upscalers, FSR on the PC. Game Boost as well can apply to older titles to improve performance. There's enhanced image quality for certain PS4, PS5 games. 8K is finally supported, VRR, 2TB SSD. A bunch of games are going to be patched to include PS5 Pro enhancements like Alan Wake, Ratchet & Clank, Spider-Man 2, and a bunch of other titles. But there's a bit of controversy. It's expensive, for one. It costs $700 USD, which is $1,200 Australian. And also, as well, it doesn't have a disc drive. So if you want a disc drive, if you like buying a disc still, you're going to have to purchase that separately for like 80 USD or 160 AUD. Rob, can I get your thoughts on the PS5 Pro?
Mate, why'd they say they brought it up? So that people don't have to pick performance or quality?
So this is the angle that they went with. They could have just said, you get better frame rates, right? And it's still going to be 4K. Some games can do 8K, but barely anyone's going to hit that. They're saying that right now, essentially, this is the case with a lot of PS5 games. You either choose between a performance mode, which is a lower resolution but higher frame rate, or you choose the graphics mode or the fidelity mode, which is 4K, you know, no restrictions when it comes to graphics, but you're playing at 30 FPS in all likelihood. And they were saying that most gamers actually choose the former because they prefer the higher frame rate. So the whole thing with this PS5 Pro is, well, why don't we just give you both? We're going to allow you to choose the higher fidelity, the higher resolution, but also you get the 60 FPS in a lot of games. So it's kind of the best of both worlds kind of thing. That was the angle that they went with. Still don't know how I felt about that, but yeah, that's what they meant.
$1,200 is steep, dude.
It's a lot of money.
Like, steep. Yeah. The only thing that I really love is the 2 terabyte SSD.
Yeah.
That's massive. Like, having to uninstall games and re-download games is a nightmare on those things.
True. Well, you have to have it, right? If there's no disk drive that comes packaged with the thing or just part of the system, you need 2 terabytes.
Disk drives are redundant anyway.
We're going to get to this again.
You put the disk in and it downloads a 60 gig download anyway.
That's true. But
the disk is pure novelty, dude. It doesn't do anything.
That is true. That is true. However, if you don't have a disk drive, you can't go into a store and buy games. You can't get cheaper games from your JB Hi-Fi's and other stores. Everything is digital, and that tends to be more expensive.
Yeah, buy it on digital.
We're going to get into this again, Rob.
grow up. The age has changed. It's times have changed, okay?
I will say this, though. Like, it's expensive, but I'm probably going to get it. And a lot of people will hate me for that. And I can understand the criticisms about it being expensive and not having a disk drive. For one, all my games are digital. I don't buy discs anymore because I've gotten used to that with PlayStation 5. I also get sent codes, so it just makes sense. But also, second of all, dude, I love playing games on the TV. I love just sitting on my couch and playing my console. And if there's a console available, even if it's a little bit more expensive, that gives me a better experience, a better performance, I'm doing it, man. I don't care.
That's how you can tell you don't have kids, dude. Like, there's no way you're getting TV. You're not getting any TV time once you have kids, man. Like,
true. True. But I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, fair enough. There's only one game worth playing on the PS5 anyway, and that's Demon's Souls. Let's be honest.
That's a little more than one game. There's some good games.
Have you played Demon's Souls?
I started it. I dropped it, though. I dropped it.
Too hard?
No, it actually wasn't that, because I found a pretty good build. But I just kind of, especially lately, if I don't have an interest to finish a game, I'm just not going to finish it. I'm not going to stress myself out by saying I got to go 100%, do all the quests before I move on to the next game. If I feel like playing a game or dropping a game, I'm just going to do that, right?
Yep. No, I feel you. Time's short.
For sure. But are you going to get this for your fan?
No, definitely not. No, it's just too expensive. $1,200. Like, and my kids can't tell the difference between 8K or Pro or 60 frames to 30 frames. Like, they won't know.
True.
Like, I'm just gonna let them run their current consoles into the ground, and then I don't know. My son's actually made the jump to computer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So big thanks to Aftershock. You want to see that?
Aftershock, dude, your PC looks so good.
Hooked him up for his birthday. Did you see my PC?
The Zen build, man.
Dude, it's wild. There's like a full little garden in there. It's so cool. Yeah, and I got one built for my son for his birthday as well.
Yeah.
So he is now a proud PC gamer as well. You know what he's playing, actually? Mm. Age of Mythology. They just re-brought that out.
The new one.
On Steam. Age of Mythology Retold, I think it's called.
Yep.
Mate, it's so trippy watching him play it because, like, I spent so much time on that when I was a kid. That was, like, one of my favorite games of all time.
Hell yeah.
And it's just so cool to see him play that. He loves it too. Did you ever play Age of Mythology?
I never played Age of Mythology, no. Oh, never really? Got into that.
Like, I still remember the silly words I used to say. Not silly. I say silly words. It's just Greek. Sorry to all my Greek fans. I didn't mean it. I talk to my friends about it, though. All the time I'm like, etymos. Like, every time. But yeah, now he's playing that. Are we just going to jump straight into what we're doing?
What we're watching, playing, absolutely. May as well.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's perfect.
I've been
segue.
Smashing Valheim with my, with my dad.
Nice.
And then I bought it for Jack, and Jack's playing it too now.
Sick.
And I just hear him all day going, "You're going to get it. You're going to get it." He's just running after dudes, feeding him with fists, man. Bare knuckles. I love
Takes
it.
Takes after his it. Dad.
Yeah, it's funny as. But I've been smashing Valheim. I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Sorry we couldn't record last week. Crazy times. So I'll get that at the end of the episode. But I've just been playing it nonstop. I think I mentioned I was playing hardcore.
Yep.
Two deaths and hardcore is gone. Like, there is nothing worse than losing all your gear and all your stats multiple times. Like, it is just because it's a grindy-ish sort of game. Like, you've got to sail to places to mine resources, and then you've got to sail back, and it takes forever. And then the wind dies on you in the middle of the ocean, and you're just sitting there, like, just stuck in the middle of the ocean, waiting for the wind to pick up again. It's just, But I'm really, really enjoying it. Really enjoying it.
Yeah. Are you reading or watching anything else?
That's what I've been playing.
Or you've just been too busy training?
Mate, yeah, I have been so busy. Last week was crazy. And again, I'll get to the
end. We'll talk about it.
We're going to jump into this. Just Valheim.
Fair.
Just Valheim. I haven't really been watching anything.
Yep.
I was reading something really, really good. What was it?
I finished reading
Malevolent 7 the other day. It was all right.
Oh, yeah.
It was all right. I like his writing. What's his name? Sebastian de Castel. He's a good author.
All right.
I've read a lot of his series, but I'm trying to see what... I don't know what book it was. I forget. Because I use Kindle Unlimited. Do you use that?
My wife does. And loves it.
And because I get a book, and then once I finish it, I return it and bring the next one. So I can't look up what they're called. But that's all I've been playing. Like, I'm itching to jump back into Valheim as soon as this cast ends. Like, I'm going to be on Valheim before my wife realizes that the podcast's over and I have to go and help out the kids.
That's fair.
Yourself, dude?
Dude, I've been playing a hell of a lot of Astrobot. So Astrobot. Latest game from, it's a PlayStation game from Team Asobi. It's like a 10 to 15 hour shorter game. It is a smaller game than maybe what others are used to, but I really recommend that you give it a go. If you've ever enjoyed a Super Mario game, in particular like Galaxy or even Odyssey, it's a fantastic platformer, man.
Is that like the game that used to come stock standard in the PlayStation when you bought
it? Yeah. So this is
because
the thing.
Because my daughter... froths on that game. She loves it. It's her favorite one. It's when the one where you got to blow on the device on the controller and you got to shake it and you got to climb like the monkey.
So that's Astro's Playroom, right? And the whole thing with Astro's Playroom was like, this is the PS5. You've got this cool controller. We're going to give you this experience of being able to test out the haptics, feedback, and the gyroscope and everything in the controller. It was a showcase for that, right?
Yeah.
So they released Astro's Playroom and they're like, you know what? People really like this thing, why don't we just make a full game out of it? So they just made a platformer with Astrobot that incorporates all of those things. It's phenomenal platforming, awesome level design, character design, traversal. You've got awesome like power-ups, like these punching gloves that you use to like smash some walls down and also traverse.
I'm getting it.
Oh, dude, if you're a fan of PlayStation as well, it's such an ode to PlayStation as a whole. There's constant like references and Easter eggs, but it makes fantastic use of the DualSense controller, man. Sounds.
I'm sold.
You have the code. So you and your kids play it. You do.
Mate,
yeah.
Last week was so wild. I totally, I've been so swamped, man.
Yeah. Dude, shout out to PlayStation. They sent us some codes and... I've been frothing over it, man. Every night, I've just been playing a couple of levels, and I just can't get over the haptics and the DualSense controller support. Like, there are times where enemies are like throwing projectiles at me, and because of the sound in the controller, it felt like the projectiles. I could hear the sound going past my ear. It was the coolest thing I've ever experienced. And then sometimes you're walking on a metal platform, and the way the controller vibrates each footstep. it feels like that you're walking on metal, and sometimes it feels like you're walking on a softer surface. It's Astros playroom, but a whole game, bro. It's the coolest thing ever.
I'm upset that I didn't give it to my daughter today.
That's all right. She can play it next time.
I'm going to go smash it. You're going to hear me froth about it next week.
Yes.
It is upsetting.
It's happened.
It is upsetting that more games don't take advantage of the haptic controller.
Especially, I was telling Steph this, that this is just a fun video game. It's I've been playing a lot of sweaty style, like intense games as of late. Yeah. And you know, I've loved it, don't get me wrong. But it's nice to just come to a game that's just really fun and that uses some ingenious, you know, controls in the controller and the haptics and everything. I love it, bro. Love it.
Yep.
So you're doing it. I've convinced you.
100%. Yeah, done.
Yes.
I mean, see, that's my weakness. So that's how you can get to me, my kids. Get through to me via my kids.
Sick. All right. We'll hear about it in the next podcast, all right? See what your kids want. Awesome. And finally, to wrap up the podcast, as always, viewer questions. If you have any viewer questions, let us know in the comments below. But first up, we have at Kaylin Williams 4204. Question for Rob. Did you get offered custom shorts? And if not, what would you want?
Nope. I would have been offered black or green. I always just say black. And if I could pick, I'd probably get maybe if I couldn't get my own logo, because I like my logo very much, right?
The Reaper one.
Yeah, I'd get the Southern Cross.
Okay. Or you can get both.
Yeah, yeah.
Do a cool mix.
That would be cool.
What color, though? Would it still be black?
Yeah, I like black.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, maybe you're going blue and red and white for Australia, but no, all black.
I just look English.
That's true. Yeah. Good point. Next up, I cannot pronounce a username. I'm sorry. Schwammatolia? Toller? Can you see how hard that is to pronounce? Question for Rob. Will your fight with Chimaev at UFC 308 be a 5-rounder? A lot of people have been asking this, bro. Is it a 5-rounder or is it not?
Yeah, it's a 5-rounder.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. It's I don't know why. It's like a co-main, but yeah, it's a 5-rounder. So
I like the 5-round co-mains. It's nice.
Yeah, you would say that.
I mean, look, I'm not the one fighting there, but
so much more work.
We appreciate it, bro. We appreciate the extra work.
I hope so.
There are just some fights. Not every fight, I will say that. But there are some fights that are so exciting at 3 rounds, and you think, I would have loved to have seen an extra 2 rounds. Yeah. Like, come on. All right. Next up is from at Dunham. Good to see the boys back. Question, if the major characters from Dragon Ball would have fought in an MMA tournament without their powers, who would come out on top and why would it be Yajirobe?
Who's Yajirobe?
Yajirobe is kind of like the small, I think is the, I don't want to say that way. He's overweight. He's a little overweight. He's got the sword, orange gi on. Google it and you'll recognize him straight away. It's not Yajirobe. That's a joke. There's no way Yajirobe wins that. Who do you reckon?
It has to be. I don't know. I don't know all the, like, this. I'm going with the old Dragon Ball Z characters, right?
Go
like,
on.
I'm not doing any of the God stuff.
Sure.
Z. I don't understand anything past that. So it'd have to be either Goku or Vegeta.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't know anyone that trains as much as they do.
Yeah. Or Broly. Broly would be a good one. But if he doesn't have his powers and his anger, like, does that still exist? I don't know.
Yeah, like, I feel like Broly didn't train as much. He was just, like, naturally talented.
Correct.
he's just so talented.
Yeah.
Like, the envy of everyone. But I feel like Goku, Vegeta were the ones that, like, really put in that work.
Period. They train more than anyone else by far. Like, so if it's just on like no 90% powers.
90% of the series is them training, like training montage.
Dude, I laughed so hard. So there was this tweet about Brian Ortega. Have you ever used a hyperbaric chamber before, by the way?
No.
Do you have an intention to, or would you like to at some stage?
Only if it was a time chamber.
Someone made the connection to Dragon Ball and I laughed so freaking hard. They're literally a hyperbaric time chamber to get better. Yeah. Next up is from Nathan Kohanen 2924. Question, I've invented an MMA move that hasn't been used before and my mates don't think it'll work. When you're on the ground in a dominant position, scream as loud as you can into their ear. Would it be effective? Could you burst an eardrum? Rob?
If you scream in MMA, you lose. They'll break up the fight.
Oh, it depends on the position, right?
No. It's like, I'm pretty sure it's just like a rule. You know that he yells.
No, so I looked into the rule because of the whole tougher thing, Volta Walker fight. And it's like, if the way you're screaming is a type of verbal submission, you're indicating to the ref quite clearly that you can't continue the fight, that's when they'll call it. Not just random screaming, I don't believe. Okay. Like yelling.
You would have to scream so loud, though.
Mm.
Like, I don't think you'd scream loud enough to like damage an eardrum.
Mm. That's a good point, though. You risk the fight being called, verbal submission.
Yeah, and I don't think you could scream that loud. Mm. And I think if you could scream that loud, you're probably not fighting.
True. You'd be too tired to, yeah. Yeah, and the last question is from at tryhardninja1089. Rob, have you played The Witcher 3?
Mate.
Go on.
Mate. Try Hard Ninja. Mate. The Witcher 3, in my opinion, would have to be the closest a game has gotten to actual art, in my opinion.
Wow.
I think The Witcher 3 is like the storytelling, the world building. I think it is a piece of art.
Yeah.
More than a game. Like, I went on such a journey when I played it that it was one of the few games, like, because you know, I don't really play story based games, and especially I don't play games where I can't customize my character.
I was going to say.
Both those things.
Like, yeah.
I will say that that was one of the few games that I went through the entire game through.
Wow.
Like, and when I finished it, I didn't know what to do with myself. I'd been taken on such a journey of story that when I didn't have The Witcher 3 in my life anymore, that there was a gaping chasm. Okay. It was unbelievable. It was incredible.
That feeling is so surreal. Once you finish a game like that and you're like, I don't know what to do with my life anymore.
That may be why I don't play story games anymore.
Really? It was so good that you can't play anymore.
Yeah, because I can't, that feeling of emptiness when you finish a story is just terrible. I hate that feeling, you know, and The Witcher 3 was the one that got me there, probably. It was unbelievable to the point where, like, I went back, I read all the books, I read all the art, I read all the novel, the drawing illustration books. I went down a massive rabbit hole.
Mm. Did you like the TV show?
No, I dropped it at probably midway through the first episode.
Yeah, they kind of butchered it, hey.
You can't real life that, like, at all. It was so cringy.
Cavill
watching.
Was so good, and they just
but it was it. So cringy watching him though try so hard to be.
No,
the Witcher.
He was the only good bit. Come on, Rob.
So cringy, dude. Like, because Cavill looked like he was trying to be the Witcher. The Witcher, like Geralt in the games, is just Geralt in the games. I don't know. Maybe it's just like a separation. But yeah.
Did you see that they're trying to do it again now that Cavill's out? It's one of the Hemsworth brothers going to be in it. It's going to be so bad.
I hope not, dude. Just leave it alone.
Yeah. But that was episode 51 of the MMArcade podcast. Rob, you mentioned that you want to talk about something at the end of the episode. I'll let you kind of take the reins with this one.
I do. So, guys, thank you for listening. Mm-hmm. And all our viewers, listeners, thank you very much. All our subscribers, thank you for all your support. If you aren't subbed, sub, like it, share it.
Please do.
We appreciate it. I'm still working my way towards my YouTube statue trophy. Yes. Picture thing, but in regards to consistency up until the fight, it's going to be on a sort of loose basis from now. The last week almost pushed me over the edge, like with training and managing, like embedded and other different commitments I have. It was just it's a lot. There's a lot on, and we were talking about it before the cast, like. It's creeping up on us. I leave in about 4 weeks.
Crazy,
it's
dude.
I'm right into the meat and potatoes of the camp right now. So I am. Last week I was very much redlining. That's why we couldn't do the cast last week, because I just couldn't swing it. So we're going to play by ear moving forward from now on. Just want to let you guys know. I will be paying attention. I'll pay attention to all the comments and to the community Discord and to all our members and channel members, because you guys are the wind beneath our sails.
Absolutely. And I'll just say this, bro, by the way, and I'm assuming on behalf of most people watching the video, dude, we want you to train. We want you to go on and beat Khamzat Chimaev. We want you to get your belt back. So the podcast can wait, man. It could take a step back.
Yep. I'll be back.
For sure. See you in the next episode, boys. Take care.
Take care.